Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
I'm Tim Fitzgerald at GoPowerCat.com.
And I'm Scott Chasen with Fog.net.
This is a replay of WIBW's TV show, The Drive.
Here's this week's episode on the 24/7 Sports Podcast Network.
Good evening, Wildcat and Jayhawk fans, and welcome to The Drive, sponsored by Briggs Auto Group. I am Tim Fitzgerald at GoPowerCat.com, and the man across the studio, because I don't like him, is Scott Chasen of Fog.net. Scott, KU won.
1-0. Fitz,
KU won.
Kansas, K-State, 1-0. It doesn't matter how you do it. I think that's what anyone in Lawrence is saying, and the opposite is what everyone in Manhattan is saying.
Pretty clear. It's the new OU in Texas of the Big 12. You can interact with us on social media at facebook.com/thedriveshow, on Twitter at thedrive13, and of course answer our weekly poll question and make your game predictions on our Twitter page. And remember, if you ever miss an episode of The Drive, you can listen to an audio-only version that will appear each Monday morning in the form of a podcast at both gopowercat.com and fog.net on the 24/7 Sports Network. And we start things off with our two-minute drill. The two-minute drill is sponsored by Vanderbilt's Your Work Boot Center.
Well, Fitz, K-State debuted with a 24-7 victory over Stanford. Were you surprised by how easy the Wildcats made it look?
Yeah, you know, Scott, going into this game, I was really confident. I thought K-State would win this game, but they just kind of cruised through it. Mm-hmm. Even their first drive that ended with an interception in the end zone, they made that look easy until the pick. And they just kind of went up and down the field as they wanted to. And in the second half, Stanford made some adjustments to slow down the K-State offense, but Stanford's offense never really found any groove. And Deuce Vaughn was just really special. Skylar Thompson was really rock solid. But mostly it was the defense for K-State that made this game such a mismatch, because they didn't let Stanford do anything the Cardinal really wanted to do. They held them under 40 yards rushing for the entire game, while K-State broke off some chunk plays, including a long run by Deuce Vaughn. And the first touchdown of the season went to Skylar Thompson, who absolutely flattened the Stanford tackler and sent a message with that. It was an impressive performance by K-State. Far from perfect. I think a lot of things they can work on. They can certainly amp up the offense more as the season progresses. And you do stop and question how good Stanford actually is. This has been a pretty good program under David Shaw, but it didn't look that way. It was particularly when Deuce Vaughn just split the defense and ran for like 55 yards for a touchdown. So a really nice opening performance for Kansas State. Now, if they'll be able to perpetuate that on the defensive side of the ball, I'm not so sure. But they really did build some confidence. And after the way last season ended with those 5 straight losses, they really needed to kind of kick it into gear. They needed to find a new gear for the program. Scott, all off season, there's been just this quiet confidence about this group. It was like they knew they were going to be better than what anyone expected. They were picked for 7th in the conference. A lot of people were picking Stanford to win this game, even though the Cardinal, and they're not supposed to be that good in the Pac-12. So I think they kind of heaped all that disrespect that they felt and put it out on the field, and were the far superior team in this game. A great start for K-State's football season.
Yeah, Fitz, I caught a good bit of this game, and that was my exact takeaway too. It was, hey, this looks like the kind of cupcake you schedule for your season opener, and maybe you're not so sharp, but you know, you're making the other team play poorly. Just so happened it was another Power 5 school.
And they didn't really need to pull out anything fancy on offense. They just kind of cruised through it because they knew Stanford wasn't going to outscore them by halftime. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy for Kansas, but the Jayhawks got their first win in 2 seasons, defeating South Dakota with a last-minute touchdown. Scott, what stood out about this game to you?
Well, Fitz, there were a few things. A lot of them kind of more on the negative side, but we'll start positive with the unit that I thought was the best on the team. I thought could be one of the better ones, but really impressed me, and it was the Kansas defensive line. But, you know, Kansas has had some decent defensive lines before. They had Dorrance Armstrong and Daniel Wise, who went on to play in the NFL just a few years ago. So they've had some decent players. But this was a defensive front under Lance Leipold that lost two players, two potential starters to SEC programs right before the year. And it was a bit of a question mark. That question mark became even bigger when you lose Sam Burt, the strongest player on the D-line, to start the game. But what happened? Malcolm Lee, you saw there, with a huge pass breakup. Kansas really won the field position battle more or less all day. Number of times the Jayhawks were able to force South Dakota to punt either into the wind or against a long field. Kyron Johnson was on the other side of the defensive line. He had a sack, a forced fumble. He's a guy, he's played linebacker inside and outside. He's probably built more like a college defensive end just because even though he's not the biggest guy, what he does really well, he's fast. He has this kind of speed rush. I had talked with him and he joked about wanting to play every position on the defense, even safety. But I think, Fitz, that's a great spot for him where he can use his skill set. And I mentioned Sam Burt goes down. You have two guys, two young players, Keenan Caldwell and Caleb Taylor. They both step up. Neither one of them had seen much game action before, but they looked great too. So I think Kansas has a lot of issues to clean up, especially offensively, offensive line. I think the defense, the secondary, that's an area where Kansas can get a lot better. It didn't burn them in this game, but that was mostly because who you were playing. South Dakota didn't have the quarterback, didn't have the weapons to beat you. But that defensive line looks like a legit Big 12 line to me. It's got a little bit of depth to it. It's got a little bit of edge to it. It plays with a lot of emotion. You have some veterans on the outside. You have a couple Buffalo transfers in there. And then you've got some young guys who, you know, Les Miles brought into this program when he was doing what he was doing on the recruiting trail and bringing in guys that Kansas probably shouldn't have got. Those guys are now going to get coached up by Lance Leipold, Brian Borland, that defensive staff. And I think Kansas could have a pretty good defensive line.
You know what? I thought KU would win. Mm-hmm. I predicted that last week. But I didn't think they looked quite put together as I thought they would. What were your thoughts? Does this look like a more complete team than we've seen in the past?
Yeah, well, Fitz, and maybe a little bit of a preview for just the end of the show. But yeah, I thought there were things they did well, things they didn't, being complimentary football, I thought they didn't do. Penalties were an issue. I thought there was some shakiness with the game day operations. A lot of that stuff I expect to get ironed out as it goes, but I just think this team is a work in progress right now, and I think that's what we saw.
Well, speaking of work in progress, let's continue.
Well, Fitz, the Big 12 went 9-1 this weekend, but Baylor, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, and Oklahoma all sort of squeaked by with close wins. Any big takeaways from the first week of Big 12 football?
Yeah, it's clear K-State's going to win. the first week is the first week, and you get really mixed results, and K-State ended up on the upper end of that, while programs like Oklahoma struggled with Tulane. Northern Iowa gave Iowa State fits, which doesn't seem anything out of the norm. It seems like that happens every year. And it's the first week. I remember last year in the first week, Arkansas State beat K-State, and then K-State turned around to beat Oklahoma. So I want to get a little bit deeper into the season before I pass judgment on exactly the good and bad here for this conference. I'll say this, though. I think this conference, Scott, might be a little more shuffled than what the early prognosticator said with this conference, picking K-State 7th, and there seemed to be a real division in the upper and lower. I think this conference is going to be really entertaining this year. And unfortunately for the conference, I think they're going to start beating each other quite a bit and really cost themselves some spots in the rankings and possibly the standings for the playoff.
Yeah, well, Fitz, that was the thing that stood out to me, right? Like Oklahoma not handling Tulane, maybe that's not a huge deal. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But when you watch the Big 12 teams play, and even if you're just checking out highlights or looking at stats, you see a lot of teams that could beat other teams in the conference. And just like you were talking about, I'm not sure that's always been the case. It does make for entertaining football. It makes for some great late season matchups, especially with Big 12 title game implications, right? Like TCU or Kansas State or someone could be battling for that second spot against Oklahoma, Iowa State, maybe another team is in the mix that we don't expect at this point. I think it's all kind of up in the air, and I think that makes for some fun things on a week-to-week basis. If you're a Kansas fan watching some of those games, maybe you're saying, I don't know that West Virginia isn't unbeatable when you get down to week 12 or things like that. Wishful thinking, but it's all part of it. I expect a really entertaining Big 12 race, but yeah, I'm not totally ready to say, you know, OU struggled with Tulane, let's panic about OU now just because, you know, let's see what they do the next 3-4 weeks. Maybe, you know, they're going to click or things will click there and they'll, you know, start steamrolling teams again.
I did like Tulane's uniforms. Man, those are sweet. Now, a quick look at your poll question results. The poll questions are brought to you by Midland Exteriors. Love the home you live in? Call today for a free estimate.
But last week's question was, will a Big 12 team make the college football playoff this year? We go to the answers. A, yes, Oklahoma narrowly beating out. No Big 12 team will make the playoff. That was 39%. Iowa State, 16% of people think they'll be in, and 5% of people think another team will be in. I guess we should have asked what that team would have been.
Yeah, now I'm really curious. Here's this week's question. With the Big 12 set to expand, do you expect the conference to stay together beyond 2025? That's when the end of the grant of rights is in that summer. A is yes, B is no. Vote on our Twitter page, at TheDrive13.
Well, that will do it for this half of the 2-minute drill, but we will be right back with more on KU and K-State on The Drive.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to The Drive as we continue our weekly 2-minute drill. The 2-minute drill is sponsored by Vanderbilt, your work boot center.
Well, Fitz, K-State came out defensively against Stanford in a 3-man front, something that's been rare in the past. Do you expect that to be more common moving forward?
Yeah, you know what's interesting about this is we've kind of been hinting at Go Powercat that they were going to shuffle the deck on defense, do some different things. We knew they had the 3-man front installed. We didn't know how much they'd use it, and they used it most of the game. We were really shocked by that. They did come out in a 3-man front. They did use 2 defensive tackles in that 3-man front. And they really seemed to confuse Stanford with it. They eventually went back to a 4-man front as they're going to kind of flex between the two. But they just looked more comfortable, ironically, in a 3-man front. So they ended up doing that most of the game. It makes them smaller but faster. They fly to the ball. They really were really good. You would think that 3-man front and being smaller might hurt their rush defense against a big physical team like Stanford because they're really big up front, but it didn't impact them. I mean, it seemed to help them. They really just flew around and wreaked havoc. This is going to be really fun to watch on defense because this isn't the only wrinkle they put in. They've got some other things they can put out there, and they've had problems with this 3-man front. Baylor runs it, Iowa State runs it, because it can morph into many things and it makes it more difficult on your blocking assignments. K-State looked like they'd been running it for a while. The most fascinating thing was after the game, Chris Klieman admitted that he called up a coaching friend because Chris Klieman is a defensive coach. He was a defensive coordinator before becoming the head coach at North Dakota State, but he'd never run a 3-man front before. So he called up a buddy to get advice on how to do this, and then when asked who exactly that was, he said, well, I'm probably not going to share that. So now we're all really curious who he got the advice from. Joe Klanderman, the defense coordinator, called a great game for K-State. He had Stanford on its heels for most of the game, and it wasn't until Stanford scored a touchdown very late in the game. They had that shutout rolling, and the defense wasn't very happy they gave up the shutout, which is usually the sign of a defense with pretty high expectations. So we'll see what they do rolling forward. Southern Illinois, followed by a really good Nevada team. They're probably better than Stanford, and we'll see if they can keep up the defensive pressure consistently and mix it up and really confuse opposing offenses.
Yeah. Fitz, you know, basketball, all the time we talk about positionless. In football, that's kind of applying to the front 7 now. When you talked to Kansas players last year, they said, yeah, it's a 3-man front, but sometimes there's a 4th guy with his hand in the dirt. And now this year, kind of the same deal. They've moved to a 4-3, but sometimes that 4th defensive lineman, more of a linebacker kind of hybrid thing. So I think it's interesting what K-State's doing, and it definitely paid off last week.
They even stood up Khalid Duke as a linebacker. He's a defensive end at one point. It was fascinating to watch. Well, Scott, Kansas has a quarterback. I'll turn it over to you. What did you think about Jason Bean leading the offense on Friday?
Well, Kansas made the announcement shortly before the game that Jason Bean was going to be the starter. They told him a few days earlier, I guess earlier in the week. Never really made a formal announcement to the team, but players afterwards said they kind of figured it out when this guy started getting more and more snaps, which is at least typically how it goes. Now, look, early on, I think Jason Bean struggled some. His accuracy, he didn't look super comfortable He was being asked to make a lot of progressions, and I think that caused some hesitancy, where he's going from guy to guy to guy, and he doesn't necessarily, you know, is that guy open enough? Should I look to the next one? Where things settled down, it started late in the half. You see that first touchdown throw to LJ Arnold, who's an uber-athletic wide receiver brought in a couple years ago by Emmett Jones. Where I think he got most comfortable was when they basically asked him, hey, you've got one read and go to it. You know, Kansas moved the ball better then. They had that fourth down in tight. They didn't get it. But when he had to move the ball late in the game on the game's final drive, he picked up a fourth and 10. He threw the game-winning touchdown to Lawrence Arnold, again, who had two touchdowns on the day. Jason Bean, to me, fits. He looked like more of a Big 12 quarterback and more of an upperclassman quarterback than anything Kansas showed last year. Now, that's not saying a ton, given that the quarterback spot was a huge, huge issue. But I think he brings a little bit of stability. He brings a little bit of experience. You know, this is a guy that none of us knew was going to win the Kansas job for a while. And that's because for a large portion of fall camp, he wasn't quarterback one. He wasn't QB two. He was QB three. He wasn't getting reps with the first team guys. Those were going to Miles Kendrick and Jalen Daniels. But what he did, he kind of stayed consistent. He plugged away. He improved. He seemed to take to the playbook better, learn kind of his reads a little bit better, become more comfortable to where his athletic tools could then elevate him. And when you combine that with an availability issue that kind of knocked out one of the top two quarterbacks for a little bit, he got his chance to show that development on the field. He looked good. He took advantage of it. And that's how you become the starting quarterback. I think when they recruited him, the hope was that he would be that guy. But I think it took him some time to show that he could be. Wasn't great. You know, decent stats, 160-something yards, two touchdowns. But he did enough fits, and I think that's important.
Yeah, what I saw of him, he was impressive. Looks like he looked like a quarterback. He looked like a field a leader out there.
He wasn't a 17-year-old freshman. I think that's important for Kansas.
And he's one of my top two favorite Mr. Beans in the whole world. And if you understand that reference, you're one of my people. And now we step out of bounds. Out of Bounds is brought to you by Copeland Insurance Agency, part of your community for more than 60 years.
Well, Fitz, we aren't stepping far out of bounds here, but media reports from The Athletic and SI have BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF as the likely four to join the Big 12. What do you think about that group?
I think it's the best four that were out there. And there was probably some discussion about Houston and going into Texas again and weighing that against some other schools. But the other three were clearly head and shoulders above the rest, being Cincinnati, Central Florida, and BYU. Now, BYU kind of causes a Western Island now. They just solved the West Virginia Island with Cincinnati, but now you've got BYU out west. And Houston keeps them four teams in Texas, which seems to be important to this conference. But I think we all agree Houston is a really good athletic program. There was just some pushback maybe about staying with so many Texas schools. What I like about this, though, is the balance between football and basketball found here, because they didn't just focus on football. And I think it keeps the Big 12 as a superior basketball conference to go along with some pretty good football programs. Mm-hmm. You have to understand that BYU and Central Florida and Cincinnati are all top 25 type programs, if not this year, within recent years. And I think that really bodes well for the conference. And you lose some high-profile teams, but the product on the field, I think it's going to be pretty darn good, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, Fitz, I definitely agree. I mean, we've seen some of these programs, I mean, like you mentioned, not just football, but especially in football, have really, really impressive seasons. Obviously, TV markets are a part of it, expanding and getting into, you know, getting new eyeballs on the sport, getting some programs that have some pretty passionate fan bases, too. I think that'll be cool. And then, you know, just one final other aspect of it, you add a national champion in UCF to replace, you know, a program that could be winning national championships in Oklahoma. By the way, tough start for Houston, now 0-1 in the Big 12 after a loss to Texas Tech.
Yeah, I was really confused. Was that a conference game or not? But they looked good for a while against Texas Tech, and then they didn't. Yeah. Now let's hear from the fans, and our fan question is sponsored by MetalArk, supporting people in living their best lives.
Well, our fan question this week, it's for you, Fitz, I assume. What'd you make of Skylar Thompson's debut? And that's from Jack in Manhattan.
Well, thank you, Jack. You know, I thought he was solid, and I don't think he was overwhelmingly good, but he did throw the ball fairly decently, except for that pick on the first drive for Kansas State. And that was more just a really athletic play by a Stanford corner. I don't think it was a bad throw or anything other than a corner made one heck of a play. Skylar's going to be fine. And, I think people might expect too much of him sometimes. But I also think he made some really nice plays. He's so good at extending plays and drives with his legs, and that's just a valuable tool for any offensive coordinator to have, a quarterback that will just pick up first downs some way, and he did that a number of times.
Two plays that stood out to me. One, you mentioned running over a guy, and the second one where, you know, you kind of just talked about him extending things with his legs, looking, keeping his eyes downfield, and then he finds the guy for a big gain. Those kinds of plays, you don't see young quarterbacks make those. You see veteran quarterbacks right. make those plays, and I think that's the value of having a super senior quarterback like
that. Yeah, he knew when to stay in and when to throw the ball.
Well, remember to ask us your questions on our Facebook page and on Twitter at The Drive 13. And when we return, we will look at our predictions here on The Drive.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back as we head down the home stretch of this week's show. And now it's time to take a look at our predictions. Remember, make your weekly predictions on our Twitter page at The Drive 13. Let's look at last week's results. The viewers went 1-2. I went 2-1. Scott went 2-1. And we are calling the rest of the season off. It's a tie between Scott and I. Congratulations on the tie, Scott.
Thank you, Fitz.
Really proud of my performance this year and glad I bounced back. But let's go on to this week's picks, just in case we want to pretend this is still a contest. Kansas. +27.5 at Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina is favored by almost four touchdowns.
Yeah. Fitz, I looked at some models that had this as a 20-point game, maybe a little less than that. That's where I think this game is. I wouldn't be stunned if it's a big margin, but 27.5, that's too high. I'm taking Kansas.
I'm taking KU, too. That's crazy. And if it's that bad, oh.
Well, Fitz, next, K-State, we put this at -19.5 for Southern Illinois. What do you got?
Will K-State win by 20 or more? Southern's pretty good. They're pretty good. They cruised their opener, but I think K-State will have a good day.
Well, Fitz, knowing absolutely nothing about Southern Illinois, I will take Southern Illinois to cover.
Do you know what a Saluki is?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Well, I know the mascot. What is a Saluki?
It's a dog.
Okay.
Our last game of the week is Iowa State, -4.5 versus Iowa as they don't leave the state again. I'm going to go with Cyclones. They'll win by five or more.
Iowa, very, very impressive in first game of the season. I'll go with Iowa, but, yeah, should be a fun game.
I have no idea who's going to win that. It's going to be entertaining. Again, make your picks on our Twitter page at TheDrive13. Now it's time for our On the Clock segment. On the Clock is sponsored by Carpet One. Buy local for a strong local community. We start with Mr. Scott Chasen of Fog.net.
Well, Fitz, I mentioned Kansas still kind of being a work in progress. I think that showed in a few ways. Penalties were not quite what you'd expect for a coach who cares so much about the details. Kansas had back-to-back false starts at one point. I think they had three false starts, another kind of formation penalty. They had an offsides that gave the other team a first down. You had Lance Leipold burn a timeout after a kickoff. He was angry about the clock. Kansas only had 10 guys on the field. They had to burn that second timeout early in the second half. Then later, he wants to challenge a 4th-and-1 that it looked like Kansas got. The referees marked him short, but he's only got one timeout left, so he was kind of scared off from doing it and didn't end up challenging what could have been a game-changing play. Lots to clean up, but I think knowing Lance Leipold, those are the things he kind of lives to work on, so I think Kansas will get those things figured out.
About 25,000 K-State fans made the journey to Dallas, and it was impressive to watch the crowd. It wasn't a huge crowd, but it was a fun environment. K-State has its home opener on Saturday against Southern Illinois, as we just discussed. And as of this weekend, they had about 3,000 unsold seats, and they really want to sell it out. It'll be very interesting. Let's see if people can indeed fill the bill. But the week after that, Nevada, and I think Nevada is better than Stanford. It's going to be fun. That's it for this week's edition of The Drive. We will see you next week right here and all week on social media.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles, Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.